solid issue for all women.
Hey there, you bunch of smashers. This is Sarah Milliken. Welcome to the Standard Issue Gigcast. In this episode, me and Standard Issue Deputy Editor Hannah Dunleavy had a fantastic time with Ashlyn B, Holly Walsh and Kate Thornton. We talked about angry emails, badges, dust busting and STD clinics. This episode was recorded in front of a live audience at Leicester Square Theatre in London. We're doing a whole bunch of these in London and at both the Cheltenham and Leamington Spa Comedy Festivals. We've got so many amazing guests. I'll just give you a list of them. Rebecca Front, Catherine Ryan, Stephanie Beecham, Joe Caulfield, Alex Jones, Jenny Clay, Olivia Coleman, Scarlett Moffat, Sally Lindsay, Jojo Moyes, Izzy Sutty, and that's not even it, there's loads more. Check out the Standard Issue page of my website for some information about that, which is www.sarahmilliken.co.uk/standard-issue. A bit of admin, just a quick reminder to please rate, review and subscribe to all of our podcasts on iTunes. And if you're interested in advertising with us, we'd love to hear from you. Email us admin@standardissuemagazine.com. Also, if you enjoy what we do, tell a friend, tell your sister, tell your neighbour, tell your nan. Remember, you can visit our archive of articles at standardissuemagazine.com, follow us at standardissueuk on Twitter, or find us on Facebook and Instagram. Everything you hear is just our opinions, so don't get het up, pets. Thanks. Right, that's my list ticked off. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Standard Issue podcast. Yay! Fab, thank you. Should we introduce ourselves? Hannah, would you like to start?
I'm Hannah Dunleavy. I am of the Standard Issue podcast. That sounds like of. A bit, yeah. I am of Standard Issue. That's a bit of Handmaid's Tale. Yes. Yesterday, I was writing a story about Ofcom, and it occurred to me that that just sounds really Handmaid's Tale, and I've got to try and cram that in a joke somewhere.
Ofcom.
Ofcom, yeah. Anyway, that's me.
Are we doing random facts as well? Do you want to do a random fact?
Do I have to do a fact?
Yeah, just a random fact. Oh, somebody, yes.
Yes. I'll pay good money to be here. Oh, God. Hello, I'm Ashling. What's a random fact?
Just about yourself, not like...
Oh, about myself? Yeah, oh, God, yeah. I thought it would be about science. I was like,
stalactites always
are tight to the top of the cave, but mites might only reach the top of the cave if they grow long enough. What's a random fact about me? God, I feel like I'm on speed dating now or something like that. Well, I have a very open heart. but not too open, not kind of scary open. Like, it's fine, whatever. If you don't want to text me back, it's grand. My mother's a retired jockey. I like to gasp at that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was kind of... No! Me too, sister!
Do jockeys retire because they're too
old? Get pregnant with
old?
Ashling? Yes.
Oh, okay.
The sort of, you hit a point with sport where I think you know if you're going to be excellent or if you're going to come second for quite a while. And so she, around kind of, she retired coincidentally around the same time she got pregnant with me. That was a lie I was told. Like, I didn't want to do it anymore. But now she trains jockeys and stuff like that, so.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's a great fact. Kate?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Kate, and random fact, in 1995, I spent the summer working off my student debt as a receptionist at a sexually transmitted disease clinic.
It's true.
Oh, my God.
In one person clapping.
Thank you. You really don't want to give me a clap. Know exactly what to do with that. It was one of the most brilliant and boring experiences of my life. It was so boring it made me really want to go and get a job that I loved, obviously.
I thought you were going
to
say an STD.
No, but yeah, it was a brilliant insight into just how low men will go. Because this guy came in, so I would sit on reception. So, and in the afternoon, it was in the morning, it was a morning clinic. I'd have all their files, and then you know the phone would be ringing off the hook. You know, hello, STD. And this guy, and just let me get your files. This guy, I'm not joking. For those listening to this podcast, 3 inches, yeah, the file, yeah, file. Just to be really clear. Anyway, this guy comes in. I hand him his files, they're quite heavy. And then I watch him suck his wait, wedding ring off of his finger. And then as he comes back, having seen the doctor, passes files back to me and asks me on a date. I mean, would you? Chlamydia, gonorrhea. Oh, yeah, he had it all. Oh, it was God. Like a buffet. So and all you can eat of STDs.
Is that a
finger
tip,
buffet,
then?
If you will.
A finger buffet.
I hate myself. I hate myself.
Is that a good tip on finding out if a potential suitor is married, is if to feel their wedding finger to see if it's damp?
Yeah, I would say so.
It's been recently socked, then just leave them.
I was shocked, and, you know, it made me very distrustful of men for a while, as you would imagine.
Did you go out with them?
Yeah, of course. Girls got to eat.
Ooh.
No, Jesus Christ, no. No.
Good fact, Holly.
My name's Holly. Oh, right, you know that. And when I was six, I was on a television show for children who were really into wildlife, and I was on a television show because I was obsessed with badgers. And I was sort of the badger spokesman for when I was six.
Obsessed? In a healthy way?
No.
No.
No, no.
No.
No. In a I didn't have friends till I was eight way.
Does that passion live on today?
Apart from badgers. The badgers were my friends.
Holly, does your passion live on today?
Of course.
Of course. Once a badger lover, never not a badger lover.
Yeah, you should see my file. But
I've never seen a badger alive.
Oh. What? Do you shoot them or something? Yeah.
You'd want to see Sarah's coat. It's just like badgers. A string of badgers hanging.
They're always squished at the side of the road, right?
Yeah,
it is actually the biggest
road.
Cause of death is
badgers. No,
no, the biggest cause of death is cars.
The biggest cause of death on the road is badgers. Just running out in front of cars like the fucking idiots that they are.
You've really You've really held on to those stats, haven't you?
Well, no, they just don't change. They just haven't changed since 1986.
But hedgehogs would say the same. It's not.
Oh God, that's my second favourite animal.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Did you used to leave milk out for them?
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that anymore. You're not supposed to leave milk. We used to milk and bread, you know, ripped up bread in it, and that's bad for them.
Well, are they gluten and dairy intolerant?
Yeah, they hate croutons. They hate them. No,
I was at a friend's yesterday, and he'd put some really lovely fences up in his garden. I said, lovely fences. And he went, look what I've done. And he'd created a hedgehog door.
Right.
Because apparently you shouldn't keep them in the garden. They should be free to roam. So he created a little kind of, you know, route out. It's lovely. Aww.
I remember one time at school, our caretaker lawn mowed over a hedgehog. And he really rolled it flat. And it kind of, the grass, we only noticed.
Like spatchcocked it.
They really did. They kind of Nando'sed it. And they really did. And we only noticed when the grass started to grow up. And the hedgehog obviously didn't continue to grow up. We're like, oh, that's a hedgehog, not brown grass.
I was going to say I've been to a sexual health clinic, but I haven't. I was asked to open a sexual health clinic on the Isle of Wight a good few years ago. And the only reason I said no was because it was too far away. The Isle of Wight is really fucking far away.
I love the idea that instead of cutting a ribbon, they just had a huge condom and made a tiny hole, and then everyone ran through. 300 people.
They just had to burst through it.
What makes you laugh? We'll start with Ashley.
Oh, what makes me laugh? My sister really makes me laugh. I think once you start working in comedy, it's hard to find genuine laughs anymore sometimes. Do you ever find that you see so much comedy and you're around funny people all the time that the difference, like what actually makes you laugh anymore, can be a bit weird? Like you know?
You're so on your own here. Everyone's like looking at their shoes.
Yeah, everyone else is going, well, if this is comedy, then it doesn't make me laugh anymore either. but yeah, maybe my sister. Is that an okay answer,
That is an adequate answer.
Thank you for it being adequate.
Let's go to Holly, because it's all right. Holly works in comedy, so...
Yeah, I have a 1.5-year-old son, though, so that is the funniest thing that's ever happened to me.
That? Aren't you supposed to say he or she? That
is the funniest thing. Are you? Oh, man. I need to... God, that's not good. I mean, he's good. no, I have to check. This is, I mean, there's so much poo involved in children, which we all know. We've all been children. We've all done lots of poos. And I have to check sometimes to see if he's... So I say to my son, have you done a poo? And he says, no poo. And then you check. And he's saying, there is a poo, isn't there? There is a poo. And he's like, yeah. And then the other day, I was wearing a pair of trousers that were a bit big for me. And I was leaning forward on the bed. And my son was sitting on the bed behind me. And he came in. And the next thing I felt was two little fingers in the back of my back of my pants. And he went, no poo. I mean, I had shat myself, but he couldn't see it. So.
Kate?
I just sarcasm. I love it. I applaud it. I raise my son on it. I just love sarcastic people.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, I do. It never guarantees to not make me laugh or smile. So, anybody with a sharp line in sarcasm... will get me going.
Sarah?
I saw a thing today on the dog walk that made me laugh. It was a dog shit, not my dog shit, because that was in a little bag in my hand, because I'm a good parent. It was somebody else's, another dog, presumably, shit. And overnight, because it was quite an early dog walk, the slugs had gone over it. and it looked... beautiful. It was like silvery and it looked like Christmassy, like somebody Christmassified a shit. And then my dog pissed on it. And that just really made me laugh that the dog was like, yeah, I'm going to add to this. Everybody else has added to this. That was quite a sweet thing that made me laugh this morning.
Can I ask you as a dog owner?
Yeah.
Because I don't have a dog.
Yeah.
But when we were kids, I remember everywhere we played, there was white dog poo, right? Does anybody else remember this?
Yeah.
Yes.
Where's the white dog poo gone? I never see it anymore. What
I think
happened?
People pick it up now, don't they?
This might sound really random, but I heard a member of East 17 talking about this already and telling me that, wait a minute, it's coming in through my psychic powers, that there was a campaign which removed the dog poo in the UK, the white dog poo away.
But what made
your children will go blind. Be careful, kids.
No, but children can go blind with any colour dog poo.
Really? There was something in dog food that made it white for a couple of years.
Isn't it? So is that what it was? I wanted to know. What was the secret sauce?
I'll tell you what it is. In the 80s, there was a lot of cocaine going around the dog food. It was coming in from a lot of places in South America. It was very easy to buy. It was sort of the yuppie puppy area, but you know. Like,
I always just thought it was because dogs used to eat more bones than they do now. Is that not what it is?
I thought it's just because they've been there for ages.
No, because it was calcium.
Because people
poo.
Didn't care in the old days. They just left their dog shit out.
I bet you any money the EU came in, said you can't put this stuff in dog food. And once Brexit happens in 2019, y'all going to be seeing a lot more of that white dog poo around the streets.
I remember vaguely having a white poo when I was a kid. So whatever it was, I'd like to know because I think I ate it as well.
It's what happens after 3 weeks at the Fringe, doesn't it? Not eating any vegetables, getting really, really drunk, and then you have a white poo and you have
double
to go home.
Double chipped in. Yeah.
Okay.
What makes you laugh?
What makes me laugh? Well, I've answered this question about five times on stage, and it's just occurred to me I've been... rude enough not to say the people I work with who are very funny and my family who are very funny. My brother is an exceptionally funny person and my nephew is. My granddad was incredibly good at telling stories. He was Irish. He had a real knack of telling stories and we all seem to just sit and learn how to tell a story from him. Mm. On the other hand, my mum is terrible at telling a story and she's so bad at telling a story. That in itself is funny. She once told me a story about how my godfather, who is Italian, weirdly, had a heart attack while driving his car and crashed it. And she told me he was dead. And then after about 15 minutes and at the end of the story, she said, oh, and then he came back to life.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yes. And I said, whatever you do, when you ring my sister and tell her that story, can you put that he's still alive further up in the story?
Because it's important.
And my sister rang me about 10 minutes later and went, you never guess what she just rang and told me. And I said, she told you Jid was dead, didn't she? And she was like, yes.
Oh my God. I had this, people in Northern Ireland, I really love working in Northern Ireland because Northern Irish people have a really dark sense of humour because they've gone through the troubles and still found happiness and laughs. And I was going out with this lad from Derry and we were all sat around his house at the kitchen table telling stories. They're like, oh my God, I remember one time we had this cousin and he decided to go up to the hotel with his friend with a bomb in the back of the car. Now this will make you laugh, Aisling, because you like a laugh. So the two of the boys, they go up in the car with the bomb in the back and he's in the back with the bomb and his friends are, oh God, now I'm going to cry now when I say this because it's so funny. He goes up and he's in the front of the car and then they're like, right, they detonate the bomb. The front guy legs it out. And what's happened to our wee guy? Only he's only put the child lock on in the back of the car. He's put the child lock on, Aisling. And I'm like, ah, lads, that's hilarious. And did he get out? No, he died. I was like, ah, God. Oh, God. And they were laughing away over this thing. God, the things you do when you're tired. Just awful. Oh, no, no.
I have a real tendency to miss the point of a story. Mm. Sarah told us a story once and it was a really unpleasant story and it had a really horrible ending.
Oh,
and
sorry.
During the point of... During the thrust, you must remember this, during the thrust of the story, you mentioned that you don't really like cheese. And then when...
How could
when
that go badly?
When you finished the story, there was a sharp intake of breath from everybody except me who went, what, you don't like cheese?
And that's when I did a white shit. Yeah. God, my mum is the worst, though. I love my mum. She is the best person. But if she were to tell a story, I'm doing it now, but she elongates it. It's not, if she was telling that bomb story, she'd be like, so they took the A26, no, sorry, the A, they took the A26 and they were in a Saab. I think it was a Saab. Was it a Saab? All this information that you think, yeah.
That's a general mum thing. They do that. So I said to Sally, you know Sally, don't you? No, I don't know Sally. You know Sally.
Yes.
But no, I don't.
You know Sally.
You do know her. You're just in denial.
My mum would be like, you know Sally. She had the extension on the back of her house.
That's Sally.
The one with the kitchen island. I told you about that last week. You're like, yeah, great. You anyway,
she's
dead.
Got bifolding doors.
They usually are dead. My mum once told me a story in which she said, yeah, you do know them. He had one eye and ran a sweet shop.
What a person to forget. Yeah. Hello, kids. I'm never going to forget you or remember you.
I just put a licorice roll in it. Yeah.
Just one little apple drop rolling around.
Yeah, exactly.
There is something inherently funny about family and the people that you grow up with. And I think sometimes humour can be really local. And I went home a couple of weeks ago. I'm from Cheltenham in Gloucestershire. And I was reminded of just some of the brilliant nicknames that were assigned amongst our family when we were growing up. And there was this kid, I will not give his real name because that would be really unkind, but when he talked out of the corner of his mouth. So you go up to him, you say, you all right? I'm fine. But this the left side of his mouth never opened. It was just like Popeye. And I still don't know what his actual real name is. He will forever be to us Luke Sidetalker. And it's just
the imagination
brilliant.
In Cheltenham is really off the hook.
Yeah, but I just love him. And even, you know, that was something that happened when he was like 13, right? He's in his 40s now and we're still going, oh my God, Luke, how's it going? Yeah. Get a poor sword.
What are the best and worst things about your work and life?
My working life, the best things are this. Genuinely, the female comedy community is quite lovely and we have a real great gang of pals and we all touch in with each other. I mean, I've got 17 WhatsApp groups on the go at the moment. It's very stressful. we discuss all of our issues and texts. But I love the community that we have, especially in the female comedy community. I love that. And it's a real joy because this job can be, the bad side is quite lonely a lot of the time. Mm. You're traveling a lot on your own. And even like this is rare, doing a show. So when we finish this show, we'll all come off and go, oh, did you enjoy that? Did you enjoy that? Normally when you're on your own, if you come off stage and go, did I enjoy that? Are you me? Are you my only friend? People think you're really weird, so you can't do that. But you don't get to experience a show with anyone else. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like, I miss that about acting, that you don't get to sort of have someone on stage with you to sort of share stuff. So that'll be the bad part of it. But on my
first tour, for the first half of it, it was just me. I didn't have a tour manager and there's no need, there's no reason. And I had exactly that. I'd come off stage and I'd be like, did it go well? Was it okay? I think it was okay. And I sort of thought about maybe bribing the sound tech in every venue with like a Twix. Yeah. Just so that they'd look up from their fucking phone at the end of the show and say, you all right? But I just had no communication with anybody at all.
And you can't tell. I mean, you can really tell when there's silence that you're doing a terrible job. But in general, you can't, you've no other person to sort of wind your head down a lot of the time. So that can be the hard part.
I once in Reading. Have you done Reading? Is it South Street Arts Centre? Have you done that?
Yeah. A little back street.
I asked for a table just for my bottle of water because I found if I bend down to get my water off the floor, all of my bellies came out my jeans and I had to like tuck them back in again. So it's easier just to have the water at a good level. And I said, could I have a table for my water? And the only table they had, because I should have asked ahead of time, was the sort of table you could have sat like 12 people around. And it took up most of the stage.
I love that it's you and the Last Supper.
And I just balanced my water on the edge. But it was, when you're talking about a quiet, it was such a quiet audience that I heard a woman open her crisps. Not eat them, fucking open them.
It's also, if you spend too much time on your own, this is what I find, like even today I was a bit nervous about coming and doing this because I spent all day on my own in the house. And like sometimes like when the Amazon man or whoever comes to deliver parcel, I'm like, hello, welcome. And you're like, oh, dial it back a bit, dial it back, your volume's too loud. Because he'll be the first human I've spoken to during the day. And even now I'm like, I was scared I'd get on microphone. They'd be like, oh, so what makes you laugh? I'd be like, cornflakes. Ha, 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 ha. What are you saying, Aisling? That doesn't make any sense. Everyone's staring at you. Why didn't you just go to the post office or something and talk to someone today? The post office is closed, Aisling. It's a Sunday. No one knows what you're talking about. You're mad. Ah. So... You do need other humans to talk to during the day. It's not natural.
Thank you. Kate, what are the best and worst things about your working life?
The best things are just the fact that no 2 days really are ever the same. And I get this kind of lovely position that I'm in where if I'm interested in somebody, I can normally find a way to kind of wrap a show around it and just have that as an excuse to be really, really nosy, which is amazing. So I love that. I love the fact that I get to be alongside people that are really inspiring, intelligent, make me want to kind of open my head a bit more, try a bit harder to be less than I am and a bit more than I could be. And the worst bits, we had a quick bowl of noodles before we came here. It's a funny old game, ours. You know, it's famine and feast. You're at the whim of so many people's personal tastes and delectations that I think sometimes that can be tricky. And you have to grow a very thick skin or a kind of fuck it attitude, because otherwise you just end up really doubting yourself the whole time. And I never wanted to be somebody that had slumped shoulders. So I spend a lot of time trying to keep my shoulders up. And these days, my chins. Of which, if anybody needs some, I've got loads. Yeah, I think it's a real mix of the two. I still get a kick out of it. I still love the fact that somebody actually pays me to do this stuff. I mean, I walk and talk for a living. It's really not that complicated. We all do it if we're blessed with good health. Yeah. Nice. And a tongue.
Yeah.
What do you do again, Kate?
Actually, when you boil it down, the answer is really not that much.
Yeah. Walk around with your tongue out.
Holly?
Oh, there's so much good stuff. I've been really lucky this year that I've done a lot of writing. And so we've sort of seen, I've seen like a lot of stuff that I've spent months and months writing being filmed this summer and stuff. And that's been amazing because you sort of think, that is something when I was a kid, apart from, you know, Saving Badgers, I would have absolutely, if you'd have told me that people would be acting out scripts that I'd written and things, it's just mind blowing. And then one of the worst things, and I think this is sort of a bigger thing, is the sort of equal pay thing. I still feel really upset and strongly about that. Not even that I don't feel that I do or don't get equal pay. But I think as role models go and as everything that's come out recently with the BBC and everything, I just think this is such a dumb system that we live in where that's not all right. And I just recently had it with maternity pay that if you're self-employed and you get pregnant and you're a woman, you get a certain amount of help, but not... Did I say that wrong? That's right, isn't it? Self-employed and pregnant as a woman. Yeah, I guess men can't get pregnant. They'd be like... I mean, that would be incredible. That would be... I mean, that would be benefit fraud. But, you know, like, you don't... You know, there's so much... That it doesn't really help. If you don't have... If you're not employed by an employer and you get pregnant, you're really sort of left to do it on your own. And I think that that's something that really needs to change. I mean, again, I was lucky because I did work through my pregnancy and then I did work... very shortly after I had a kid. But I think for other people...
When you're self-employed, you do feel that pressure to do that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of women who definitely are trying to build a business or trying to be enterprising and things just aren't getting that support, which seems mad to me because I think, again, it's just another example of not letting women go out there and try and do their own thing and be their own boss and everything like that. It's like, you know, get a proper job, try and get one with a good contract. It might not be a job you want to do, but it'll help you because you'll be able to get maternity pay and stuff. When really women should be like, well, I want to follow my dreams and do whatever it is I want to do. But now I feel like I'm on question time. But, you know, there's...
it's really disappointing to think that in this day and age we live in a very, you know, a developed part of the world, that there is still a significant difference between what a man and a woman can get paid for doing exactly the same job. And there's no other way of dressing it up. It is utter bullshit.
Agreed. Hannah, do you want to do this one or are you bored of doing the best and worst thing?
No, I mean, this is the best thing about my job. Oh. It's good. I mean, I have an ideal job. Well, an ideal job for me, I spent 90% of my time in my pyjamas. And I spend the other 10% of my time on stage saying cunt. I mean, that's literally a dream job for me.
Is that when you went to see your careers advisor at school?
Is that what you put on your list? What is it I can do that's going to... it hadn't been invented yet, but yeah. I think it's what... I mean, it's a bit of a mixed bag, isn't it? Because when... I mean, I've done comedy before. I don't do it anymore. And the thing about comedy is you get that instant, like, these people like me or they don't like me. But I have written for years and years. And now social media means that people can tell you if they like what you've written almost immediately. And that is a blessing and it's a curse. I mean, in some ways, you know, when people say, oh, this is like... Well, you know, people feel the need to tell you this is shit if they think it's shit, which is... they're entitled to that opinion, of course. But... You know, when suddenly you see Sharon Horgan retweeted that, you think, oh, Sharon Horgan retweeted something I wrote. Yeah. She read it. She liked it. That's a really good feeling. I rang my brother once at 4 o'clock in the morning and I said, it's really important. And he woke up and he was like, what? What is it? And I said, Mike Judge has followed me on Twitter. And he was like, okay, yeah, that seems quite important. Yeah, thanks.
I recently had someone send me on my Facebook page a private message saying that I was a stupid Irish gypsy knut and they'd spelt cunt wrong. And I was like, mwah, 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 happy, happy day. And I was like, oh, gooded for you, mate. What a time to have a typo. I was really happy with it as well. I was like, what a knut.
What about you?
Brilliant. I think it's sort of similar to what Holly said about what I love about my job is that when I started writing when I was about 17 and for ages, like nobody like read it. I didn't show anybody. And now the fact that I can write something and it can either, you know, it can get printed or it can be, you know, I've written a book, which is crazy. That the thing is, I suppose it's the time that I've spent sort of building up, you know, sort of a profile, if you like, for want of a better word, that I now, when I write something, somebody wants to read it, where in the past, that was always a nervous thing. Because when you write, I write such personal stuff that it's terrifying when you hand it over. And that hasn't changed in the slightest. Like, I've had to hand my proof, a copy of my book out to various people to read, and it absolutely makes me shit my pants. But the fact that people are reading it feels like the difference. I think it feels more worth it.
But don't you get a buzz from just finishing? And the older I get, the more I just enjoy finishing things, whether they're good or bad or not. Mm. I just think having actually an item in my hand, like holding your book in your hand, it's an object, it's a thing now. Like there's, it's not just an idea. It's not like, oh, one day I'd like to write a book. I think we all worried a bit too much that the thing we're going to make is going to be crap or not. And I think in a way, don't worry about that. Just get to the end of the project and then look at it, print it out and look at it, or, you know, film it or do whatever you have to do. And it's such a nice feeling just to go, well, I did it. Even if it's shit, I did it. And that
Sheryl
feels
Sandberg,
good.
Who's a Facebook CEO, has a thing which is like, done is better than perfect. Which is how I approach my love life. Yeah. but it is true. Like, we're always trying to make something so perfect, and then it'll be finished, and then when this happens, that'll be fine. And actually, there is no... Mm. I have to recommend this book I'm reading at the moment. It's absolutely amazing.
You'll
it's
never
really
finish
changed my
it.
Life. I'll never... I've got the rough gist from the first two pages. But it's by this... I'm sure you might have seen her TED Talks, Brené Brown. So Brené Brown's TED Talks have been the most watched TED Talks that there have been. One's about vulnerability and one's about shame. And the book I'm reading, it's one of those, ironically for a book about shame, I'm really too embarrassed to read it on the tube, because it's called The Gifts of Imperfection, How to Be Yourself Without Trying to Be Anyone Else. And then it's got like a dove on it and you're like, ah, shite, it could have had like just a picture of like a grass or something, you know, to cover it up. So you're not on the tube going, I'm working on myself. But it's, the whole book is so beautiful, and it's all about shame and vulnerability. And when you put something out, the biggest fear is, oh, I'll be shit. And that feels like it's the biggest thing in our society, that we're so afraid to show our vulnerability and admit that we might be a bit of an idiot, or that we might be embarrassed or ashamed of something. Mm. Really recommend everyone to read it, men and women.
Sort of leading off that, one of the things Kate and I were talking about that I don't like about my job is being judged on your appearance, which I've talked about on these podcasts before. But I did a gig yesterday up in my hometown in South Shields, and it was... just me and another comic called Jason Cook just sitting on a stage, and it was sort of, I think he tried to call it dicking about, but they wouldn't let us put that in the brochure of the theatre. So it was called like chatting, which is not as good. I was really looking forward to it until I was told there was a photographer coming. And that made me instantly think, oh, now I've got to do my hair properly and I've got to put proper makeup on. And I hate the idea that anything that happened in that hour, however funny we both were and how entertaining the hour was for the audience, would be condensed down into a photograph of what I see as a fat woman in a chair. And it really pissed me off. And when I got there and I'd done my fucking hair and I'd done my fucking face, and he went, oh, yeah, photographer's not coming anymore. And I was like, yeah, yeah. Just rub all that makeup.
I remember in this very room, I did Richard Herring's podcast, and we had a lovely time, but I'd had a bit of a bad winter. It was after a breakup, and it was just cold, and I really hate the cold. So I put on every piece of clothing I owned, but I kind of slouched out, big old cardigan jumper, my big winter boots, and I sat there on stage, and I was doing a podcast, which is for people's ears and the audience, and this won't make any sense for anyone listening to this, but I kind of sat in the chair, and he'd give me a big bag of minstrels, not the old-fashioned racist thing, but like the chocolates, and a big bag of minstrels, which I thought was an odd gift. But I was sitting there eating these galaxy minstrels, and really, like, you know, I'd let my head go back into my neck where it's comfortable, sat there like this, eating these minstrels with this kind of cardigan down a bit, barely put on any makeup. It was after a breakup, and I was just sitting like this going, ah, yeah, well, that's how I feel, Richard, and that's it. And then I'd no idea that the whole podcast had been filmed. And yeah, and I don't watch anything. Like, I really don't watch anything I do. But someone sent me a link to this podcast, and they were like, ha ha, you love minstrels or something like that. And I'm like, what is he talking about? How did he know? And I just clicked, and it was a YouTube link. And there I was, sat in the back of the chair, squashed head like this for like an hour, however long the podcast was. And I felt really, really embarrassed, because if someone had told me, I would have just sat up, and then it's there for all the annals of time to watch. But also someone underneath that had written like, something like, why does Aisling look like a stressed out single mother on benefits? Or something like that. And I wouldn't have minded, but it was a perfect description of how I looked. Like, it was so just, it was really great. I'm like, yeah, if I was a costume designer, that's how I'd make her look. Mm-hmm. Eating a bag of minstrels, looking stressed and sad.
Every time I do the one show, during one of the video clips that they put on, somebody runs over to me and says, sit up straighter! Because apparently I just get so excited that I'm there that I just get really comfy and I slouch down, and the boobs become the belly and the belly becomes the fanny and the chins are everywhere. Yeah. And apparently I'm too comfy for telly. Which would be nice.
It'd be really funny if everyone else on the sofa and you're just on this really hard chair at the end.
Strapped in.
Just on a bar stool at the end.
In one of those Hannibal Lecter type things. Yeah.
Really just in a straight jacket.
Would you like, I'm assuming we all grew up in the 1970s/80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to be a young person growing up now or a young person growing up when you were?
We talk about this a lot, actually, because I've got a 9-year-old son. I think it's hard now to be a kid. So, no, I wouldn't. I liked my childhood. That was hard enough, in as much as, you know, girls can be absolute bitches sometimes, can't they? And they can also be amazing, but I didn't have particularly brilliant experiences at school at the hands of some, you know, some of the girls there, and some of the girls that were there are still my greatest friends to this day. But I think when you put into the mix social media and the pressures that kids are under now, no, I wouldn't. And I fight really hard to try and keep my son away from all of that, and just keep saying to him, just go in the garden and kick a ball. Just get off, you know, reduce that kind of device time, because there's years for that. And, you know, the kids at his school are already kind of talking, and this is boys, talking about six packs and weight, and he comes home feeling bad about himself, and you're going, what? You're 9 years old. You shouldn't even be able to spell weight.
Well, he should. Yeah.
But which one? That's the problem, right? Is it WAIT or WEIHD? Anyway, I think it's hard. I don't think I would want to be, and I certainly wouldn't want to rewind the clock either and be my younger self again either. No, especially not like, you know, being like in your teenage years again or your early 20s.
Yeah,
especially when you think you know it all and you know fuck all, then you're just annoying.
Ashlyn, how old are you now? You're quite young, aren't you?
Me, I have a casting age of 13, but I am 33.
You're 31.
Oh, I like that. I might have a casting age.
Yeah, I have a casting. I actually look like a young lamb on camera.
You may be grew up in the 90s.
Very strange.
But what would your casting age be, seriously?
Yeah, probably between 27 and 35. Or like in maybe one more year, old witch.
I've got an Oscar-winning part for a 26-year-old, so I guess.
Oh, wait now. Let me...
Sorry.
Maybe one bottle of water. If I hydrate, maybe I can get it. Please cast me, Holly. I'm so hydrated. I grew up sort of at the tail end of 1980s Ireland and early 90s Ireland. So
I love when she said tail end of 1980s Ireland and 1990s Hawaii.
So myself, we're very much a beach people and are... Would I change the floral necklaces to real flowers like we had back in my childhood? Yes. None of this plastic shit. But yeah, they were the best of Honolulu times. They were the worst. I grew up in, tail end of 1980s Ireland, which was the Troubles. And Ireland was like this very odd place to be, maybe, but being a kid in it, post then Riverdance, and all of a sudden we were like these welcomed dancing idiots around the place, and the culture just shifted. And then I was a teenager around the Good Friday Agreement, so a real weird historical period.
But unless you don't even like give Boyzone a mention.
But Boyzone, obviously, they were the key to my life. But it was a very odd time. I look back now and I would have loved to have grown up now. Ireland was a very dark place in many ways, and I was a kid during it. Suicide was decriminalised in 1989. Divorce came in 1995. Gay marriage came in 2 years ago, but being gay was only decriminalised in 1992. You couldn't get a condom without prescription until 1992, I think, as well. And that legacy of secrecy and shame and stuff still is only trickling out now, but I had no access to, like, how many young girls are here in under, say, 25? Give us a shout. I had no access to come and listen to women speaking just on podcasts. There was no podcasts then. That was probably the main reason
internet.
I didn't listen to them. Yeah, and the internet. And so I know all the stuff about pressure and Instagram, and that's something we don't know yet. It's an unknown thing. But in terms of how the country I've come from has changed, has been so crazy that I would love to maybe... have not had all that baggage, that Catholic baggage growing up. And they literally give you a big bag of crosses to kind of carry around.
How brilliant that you've lived through such monumental change, and that in your lifetime so much has happened, has been cast aside because it is not relevant.
Debate in Ireland, abortion is still illegal in Ireland, and every single day 12 Irish women leave Ireland to go and get an abortion outside of Ireland. Still, every single day. They go out and they go back. They always like leave their passport.
According to the Daily Mail, it's the same 12. They never learn.
They're out there flaunting.
So it's Mary, Teresa, Siobhan, Niamh.
I didn't mean to belittle Sinead. It. I just went for the joke.
Not at all. But like that, still, like I can't, like I can only imagine what it's going to be like in maybe 20 years' time when we look back at that and go, God, it was just, it's still in the Irish Constitution, it's written in that women can go and get a job as long as they don't neglect their duties in the home. And that's in our Constitution.
Are you joking?
No. And that's still, serious? And we're like, we couldn't change it, but who was a time for admin? So a lot of that, I feel like it's breaking.
Wow.
And the one good thing, if it sort of feels like a hopeless time at the moment, but I do feel the sort of good thing that with something like, say, Donald Trump being president, and if you look at The Handmaid's Tale, I'm not sure if you guys have watched it, but it's an amazing show, but it feels like there's a crack forming in all the things we used to find precious and scared to talk about. And it started with the Women's March, and people are like, oh, what did it actually achieve? It achieved young girls going out and being vocal. I didn't go out and march. I wasn't vocal about politics when I was in my teenage years. We just sort of kept silent and got on with it. And it feels like a change is coming because we're not going to fucking put up with it anymore. And that feels like we're all getting together and battening down our hatches for something kind of bigger to make proper changes. And if there's any good to come out of that, that's sort of what it feels like. So yeah, I wouldn't mind being a kid now growing up with that in my, that sort of like armor in my bag. Where would you keep your armor? In your bag? Where do those guys keep their armor?
Holly?
Yeah. I wouldn't. We were lucky. I'm lucky that I was brought up in a really, you know, pretty progressive country in the 80s and 90s, and, you know, gay marriage and everything. You've said, you know, it's always been a big, important milestones have been achieved and everything. I do worry about the internet, exactly what you were saying, Kate, and I'm just grateful that I was alive in a time when things could be deleted and nobody recorded it and stuff. You know, like,
what did you do?
Oh, you.
You didn't. Want
some
recorded.
Of the stuff I said about the Fox community. I was so militant badgers at the time that I look back and I've mellowed now, but I had some strong feelings about foxes. But I. No, even now, you know, even now, I remember reading an article about Chris Rock, and he was saying that when he was writing a lot of those formative routines, you know, those incredible ones, which are really about, you know, all the civil rights stuff and everything. And he said if he was doing it now, working it out, and people were taping it, he would hate for that to go out. And there's jokes that I've done that I've looked back on and thought I could have changed that, but it's already out there and there's nothing I can do about it. And my intentions, I feel like, were really good in the reasons why I wrote those jokes, but then I watch them and I think, I listen to them back and I think, I could have tweaked that a bit. That probably could have been said in a better way or whatever. And I wish sometimes that there was an opportunity to delete stuff or take stuff down if you didn't want it up there. And I think that a lot about kids, you know, what you do as a teenager, there's so much stuff that I'm just
that
so,
is happening though. The law is coming in to anything your internet life pre-18 deletable. It's just happening very slowly.
Yeah, but even as an adult, I mean, maybe it's because we do jobs on TV and radio and stuff, but there are things that I think, I just changed that a bit or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I adore the internet. I think it's an amazing way. We live in the most connected world now, and it's fantastic. But you're right to be held accountable for a view that you had at 16.
Yeah. But even, I mean, I don't even think it's at 16. I think we're all entitled to change our views about things, and we're all entitled to say things in a clumsy way and then say, that's not how I meant it, but I've already said it and it's already out or whatever. You know, things like that, I think that's what I struggle a little bit with in modern times. And also, I'm one of those terribly paranoid people who Google things, you know, having, you know, kids and stuff, I Google stuff, and I think there should be a bit more I don't know, this is money, but people on the internet who are sort of adjudicators or whatever, you know, for example, when you've had kids or when you're pregnant and you think, you Google, oh, I did this, is this a really bad thing? And there's 15 people online going, you're an idiot, well done, you've screwed up your kid's life forever. Mm. And I wish that there was just a few more doctors online going, actually, it's probably not that bad, I wouldn't worry too much about it. And I think the internet is great for information, but it's also great for just spiraling. I mean, I kind of have really taken a step back from using the internet, and I took myself off a lot of social media and things, because I just thought, this is no good for my mental health. And I think there should be a bit more help with helping people use the internet. I mean, this is also down to my crazy brain, but you know, you can really get stuck in the internet, and it can be a really negative place. And I'd hate the idea that my kids would read something and then think, oh, this is true, and now I'm going to really worry about it. And all you need to do is say, you were just Googling the wrong page. Yeah. That's not what this is about. They Google,
one of the scariest things that ever happened to me was when my nephew just decided to say, apropos of nothing, I Googled you yesterday. And I went, oh, fuck. And I was like, what did you find? And he said, some videos of you when you did comedy. And I thought, what the fuck was I saying? I mean, he's not going to find anything terrible, but I'm pretty sure that a lot of people who do have kids probably don't think that one day they're going to sit there and just type that name into Google.
It's terrifying. My son, his father and I are separated. So when he's at his dad's, he came home one weekend and he went, I was really missing you this weekend, so I Googled you. And I just went, oh, God. And he said, I saw you with Matilda's daddy. Matilda's daddy is Lee Francis. And it was a sketch that I'd done on Bo Selector years ago where I was interviewed by a bear with a massive hard-on. Try explaining that.
Now, I know what you're all saying. I think you're all right about the internet, but it's similar to how you said about all, you could look at wrong answers. You can also now look at right answers.
Yeah.
So I once ate a whole pineapple. It didn't have the fancy head on and stuff. No. But I asked on Twitter, because the thing is, I was going away the next day and I didn't want to waste the rest of the pineapple because it was going to have to go in the bin. So I just thought, oh, it's really nice, I'm just going to eat it. And I asked on Twitter, like, what, just, you know, asking for a friend. What happens to somebody if they eat a whole pineapple? And somebody, one of my followers, who is a doctor, thankfully, replied and said, you'll just get the shits. But pre-internet, I would have just been surprised by the shits. But in a world of internet, I could take spare trousers with me.
We had the same problem growing up in Hawaii, the amount of pineapples we would eat.
Would you like to be a young person nowadays, Sarah?
In some ways, no, because I think I was bullied at school, no surprise there. But I think when I came home and we just shut the front door, that was all the bullying stopped for the day, where now, because of phones and Facebook and stuff, it continues, and I think it must be horrendous. But in other ways, like, paper chase didn't exist when I was a kid. And, like, I never really got the full benefit of Claire's accessories. So for those reasons, I would like to grow up now, please. What would your superpower be?
Well, I don't know if it's a superpower, but everyone always comments how ridiculously quick I go to the toilet. And that's got to be really helpful in things like, zombie apocalypses, stuff like that. Sorry?
Ones or twos?
How many pineapples a day are you eating?
Yeah. Like, we'll be in the pub and I will say I'm going to the toilet and then I'll come back and everyone will go, fucking hell,
Is that because you don't wash your hands?
No, I've come to
Do you
to
not buy Chupa Chups when you're in there, have a little spray of perfume?
Come to conclusions because I don't look in the mirror. I just go in, have a wee, wash my hands, come out. I can't see the point of looking in the mirror when you're out. You know, I look in the mirror before I leave the house, and the chances of me looking better further on in the evening are virtually zero. So just keep that memory in your mind of what you look like. Don't look in the mirror and
we've
go
We've
got
on. A mirror. So the last mirror that you can see before you go out the front door is about this sort of size. So it's kind of, it's a bit slightly longer than A4, let's call it that. And it has three different moustaches sort of painted on. So the last thing I do before I go out of the house is work out which Tash looks best with this outfit. I think that's quite a good. Yeah. That's quite good for me.
I have trouble because a friend of mine put the mirrors up in my house, and he's like 6 foot, and I'm 5 foot, so I can only really see the top of my head in most of the mirrors in my house anyway.
So you can wee really quickly.
I can wee really quickly, and I'm pretty sure that in times of crisis that will be helpful.
Kate, what is your superpower, love?
Probably goes back to the STD clinic.
What, you can sense them?
You can sense a married man.
I can spot them a mile off.
You got nothing on me, mate.
I'm looking at her now. I'm seeing it. It's gonorrhea.
Oh, it's going to the back.
Silent but deadly.
It's gonorrhea.
Do you know what? I don't think I have a superpower. But I do have one. I have one thing that when I get it in my hands, I automatically get a massive sense of calm. So it's a bit like my kryptonite.
You just assume it's a penis. I'm sorry.
It's really not.
Oh, I'm still calm.
It's a dustbuster.
Oh, I love a dustbuster.
Love it. The other day I thought it had broken, and it was like having no Wi-Fi. I was like, what? What do you mean? What? It must be the battery. And I was Googling like how to fix a dustbuster brackets pet version. Don't even have pets. Just want that extra hard clean. I bloody like love that. It was my 40th birthday present to myself, and it's a Dyson. I didn't scrimp. I'd had the Black & Decker. I thought, do you know what? You're 40 years old. You're worth more than that. And I did. I've not even spent this much money on shoes. It's like over 250 quid, the pet version.
Oh,
it's deluxe.
God. Is it very lightweight?
So light in your hands, sir, I can't tell you.
You should definitely work for Anne Summers. That's all I can say. With this chat, you don't need batteries, it's light in your hand, it's easy to clean.
Does it make you sneeze if you push it to your nose? That's what they make you do, isn't it?
But you know what? If you did, I could clean it up in no time. I've got every extension possible.
All the attachments.
Everything. I mean, it the size it grows to is unbelievable.
So your superpower is Dustbuster? I love that.
My superpower is that probably I will grow older, the Dustbuster, because I'm so, honestly, I am so obsessed with it. My best mate came to stay for the last 3 days. And when we left, she was just like, seriously, you just need to have a little word with yourself about the Dustbuster. Because I put her in the spare room up at the on the top floor of the house. And she said, 7:45 in the morning, I zzz, zzz, zzz. And the poor kids...
Was that definitely the Dustbuster now?
Yeah. That's what I told her.
A bottle of wine and 11:45 at night, Dustbuster. Yeah.
Have you started accidentally spraying things on the ground just to give it another go? Knock over those
Honestly,
again.
Honestly, though, but has anybody in the audience got a Dustbuster?
I do.
Oh,
I
fucking hell, I'm really not amongst my own, am I?
Ashley, what's your superpower, love?
What's my superpower? I think it'd be, you know, when someone doesn't text back, just why they don't text back. Like, that drives me nuts. If I see the three dots for ages, you know, the three dots in an iPhone, three dots, three dots, three dots, three dots, three dots, and then three dots disappear. Oh, they've changed their mind. Maybe they're doing a redraft. What's going on? Three dots are back, three dots, three dots, three dots, three dots, three dots.
What's your superpower in that? Just paranoia or?
Yeah, to remove paranoia. So knowing, oh God, they've been run over by a bus. I can relax.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's not me. That will be, yeah.
I always think that about people who leave answer phone messages, you know, that when they've got the answer phone message, it's like, if I don't make it to the phone, it's because I'm either on another call or away from my desk. And I always think there's a third option, and that is that you've had both your arms cut off and you're trying to get help. But
or I don't like you.
Yeah, or I'm ignoring you.
Holly, what's your superpower?
I had an accident about... 6 years ago, and I broke my arm, and I had a metal. I've basically got loads of metal in my elbow, and I can predict when a thunderstorm is about to occur.
So that you could get out of the way.
Yeah. I'm basically a conductor. And
You're
I'm
like a weather dial.
I am. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah,
shortly after the lightning, I'm like, I think there's going to be thunder. But, no, but. I just know it. There's going to be... You wait to... It's thunder, thank you. No, but
You're like a cow, because they lie down, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. So like a cow.
Sorry, I know it's not badgers. I know that's not...
Black and white, though, so I'll have it.
What's your superpower, Sarah?
Oh,
Stationary.
That's your kryptonite.
You just made me wet.
thanks. I think I'm good at emails. So I'm good at, you know, if you want to send a really twatty email, I'm really good at kind of polishing it so it sounds less twatty but is still really twatty. So my husband will say, oh, I want to send an email, but it's going to sound quite arsey. And I'll help him make it sound a lot better. And also I've got a trick, which is a good trick if you sometimes send arsey emails, is that you don't put the address in of the person you're sending it to until you're happy with the email.
Always.
Isn't that a good tip?
Yeah.
Great tip.
So you write the whole thing, you read it, you ring a couple of people, you check that it's not too arsey, and then you put it in. Because it's so easy to start at the top when you just put the address in and then you write the email and you accidentally send it when you're still taking out the fucks and putting bloodies in.
Yeah. When I go through my drafts, I then have to take loads of stuff back because I've been going, why the fuck didn't they get back to me? Lazy fucking butt. Oh, I didn't press send.
Yeah. So that's another tip, is make sure you press send. Should we do a quick plug round?
Yeah.
If anybody has anything to plug. Holly, what do you have to plug?
I have a gig that's starting in September that I do every other week. And I've been running it for years. And it's in New Cross in South London. And it's called Happy Mondays. And it is £5. And it's really cheap to go. And it's just really about sort of having an independent club for comics to try stuff out and audiences who are really sweet.
And haven't you got a sitcom?
I do, yeah. I've got a sitcom. Well, me and a bunch of other people have a sitcom.
We'll mention it.
Called Motherland that we're filming at the moment.
Did you see the pilot of Motherland?
Yeah.
The Churchill dog is in.
Oh, yes. I love Motherland.
Great to have you here, sir.
It's brilliant.
She liked it. That's good.
Yeah,
that
it was brilliant. It was. When do we think it's coming
out? I'm not sure. Okay. So that's what's this space.
But it's
we're filming it
at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very exciting.
Very excited.
Thank you. Ashley, what do you have to plug?
I am doing Happy Mondays gig with Holly. When are we doing the gig together?
A few weeks.
In a few weeks' time, I think. So that'll be fun. And then Taskmaster will be out in the autumn. That's on...
Love Taskmaster.
That's fun. And that's myself, Nish Kumar, Sally Phillips, Bob Mortimer and Mark Watson on that one.
Nice.
That'll be lots of fun, I think. But yeah, I think that's it, maybe.
Thanks.
No
Kate.
Problem.
No plugs. But I am hoping to appear at Happy Monday.
Yeah, please.
I'm looking for you forward to your 40-minute set on dust busting.
Listen, we don't live far from each other.
We
come
don't.
Check it out.
I
seriously,
am.
It's a beaut.
What, you're a dust buster?
Yeah,
great. I will.
We're all laughing now. Cut to
you know what I am. Yeah.
What's the deal with dust busters? Blah!
Could I have come over as more dull?
No,
really?
No, because you. I tell you why you can't. Because you opened on that incredible STD clinic.
There you go.
You started on STDs and ended on
dust busting. I've got more where that came from.
Oh, more STDs.
Yeah,
that's why the guy kept going.
Do you know what though? After that job, I just thought I can't stand this. I can't hack it. So I got another job, another kind of summer job, and I was in charge of vending machines at Shell Oil. And that's a true story. That was really dull.
Aren't you on the radio?
I am. I'm on radio too. Yes. So yes. Do give us a whirl. I'm always on listen again if you can't, you know, find me in the moment.
What time is your radio show at?
So it's next Saturday, 3 till 6.
3 till 6.
3 till 6.
And do you want to mention your...
I have a website and I literally sweat blood and tears for it. So please do pay us a visit. It's called tbscene.com. And it's me and a load of like-minded women. So yeah, come pay us a visit.
Yeah, nice.
TBScene.
Yeah. TBSWEN.com.
Hannah?
Our podcasts.
Yes.
Which you can find on iTunes or Podomatic. This one will be up in a couple of weeks, I would imagine.
So, because as well as the live ones, we do also do a podcast that is the magazine
in a podcast form
for the other 3 weeks. So we are weekly.
Which another one will appear on Wednesday morning. And we've got loads of shows.
Yes, September's sold out.
September is sold out. We have one in October. We have, in fact, go to the website, Sarah's website, sarahmillican.co.uk, or the website of this theatre.
Yeah, Leicester Square Theatre website. So we're doing all the way through until May now, I think. I don't think they're all up on the site, but we are doing one a month. So if you've had a nice time tonight, please come to another one.
And if you find yourself in Edinburgh, we are up in Edinburgh doing, we have four shows
doing
up
the Fringe.
There. two stand-up shows and two in conversation events.
Indeed. And I am on tour from January until December. So if you see me, I might be crying or eating chips. or both. And I have a book out. My autobiography is out on October the 5th, and I will be doing, I think, some book events around that time as well, should you want me to read a bit aloud for you. If you're like, I can't be asked to read the first chapter on my own, come along and I will read it to you. You've been such an incredible audience. Thank you so much for coming tonight. We hope you've had a lovely time. Please join me in thanking our fabulous guests, Aislinn B, Kate Thornton, Polly Walsh, Anna Dunleavy, and I've been Sarah Millican. Thank you very much. Good night.
You've been listening to Standard Issue in conversation with Aislinn B, Holly Walsh, Kate Thornton, Hannah Dunleavy and me, Sarah Millican, recorded live at Leicester Square Theatre in London. The theme music and stings were composed and recorded by Barry Hilton, all rights reserved. Thanks to Maddie and Richard for all tech things, to Jen Offord for organising the event, to all at Leicester Square Theatre in London and to Aislinn, Holly and Kate. All of our podcasts are available on iTunes and Podomatic. Bye-bye.
Standard Issue for all women.